Welcome, welcome, welcome to Armchair Expert, Experts on Expert. I'm Dan Shepard, and I'm joined by Monica Mouse.
Hello there.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
How are the mice? I know you're the secretary of mice.
The mice are doing pretty good. They had a nice long weekend. They got really drunk.
Oh, okay.
So they're nursing some hangovers.
Yeah, those mice will lap up a little liquor out of a liquor cap.
That's right.
You leave one on the ground.
That's right.
Are the mice excited about Spotify?
They are so excited.
They are?
Yeah, they've
You hear them clamoring around once they're drunk?
They've all made accounts and they're really excited. They're mostly excited because it's free.
It's free. It's absolutely free. All you gotta do is download the app. It's so easy. You're just gonna pick that app over the other app that you might have been using, but probably you're already on Spotify. Point is, it's so simple.
Yeah.
Also, we have an incredible first guest
for
Spotify that I'm so excited.
Yeah, we do.
So for me, July couldn't get here quick enough because I cannot wait to release that guest.
Yeah.
But I'm also very excited to release this guest.
Me too.
Bubba Wallace. Bubba Wallace. Bubba Wallace, wanna rock you? Wanna rock you, Bubba Wallace? It's all I wanna do. Wanna love you, wanna hug you, wanna squeeze you too. You can cut this out, Monica. Bubba Wallace is a professional stock car racing driver. He competes full-time in the NASCAR Cup Series, as well as part-time in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. Now, amazing spokesperson for NASCAR. We had such a blast talking to him.
Yeah, and I normally am not, I don't know much about it. It's not really my thing, but he was so interesting and cool.
Yeah, he's very, very engaging and charismatic. And I'm going to tell you something, he's very handsome.
Very.
Because you don't have to be good looking to be a race car driver. That's kind of the beauty of it. You're wearing a helmet all the time.
It's like us. It's like podcasters.
Yes. We can afford to look the way we do, but it's a shame that Bubba's in a helmet, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please enjoy Bubba Wallace. We are supported by Third Love. Monica.
I love a third love.
Tell us about your third love.
It just fits so perfectly, and the straps are so comfortable. Often, you'll see girls kind of like tugging at their straps.
Sure, wrestling with their brassiere.
You don't have to do that with Third Love, truly. And, I mean, obviously the best part is that there are so many sizes, so you will find something that fits truly perfect.
Well, also, you know, you got to think of your brassiere as something that you can treat yourself to.
Yes.
Right? Like, like self-care. Like, you deserve a really good quality, perfectly fitting bra. Now look, it's nice to treat yourself once in a while. Give yourself some TLC Third Love Comfort. Third Love knows the science behind top to bottom comfort without sacrificing style, from perfectly fitted bras and underwear to quality sleepwear. Putting on your essentials feels like indulging yourself every day. Third Love is your go-to destination for comfort and quality everyday essentials. Find your new favorite everyday essentials from their all-new Feather Lace collection to their number one rated 24/7 classic t-shirt bra. Designed with premium cotton fabrics, available in drapey, easy fits, sized extra small to 3X. They stand behind their products, and if you don't love it, you can exchange and return it for free. Third Love's team of expert fit stylists are available via chat or email to answer all of your questions. So far, Third Love has donated over 40 million in gently used return bras to women in need, supporting charities in their local San Francisco Bay Area and across the United States. If you want a perfect fitting bra, just go online and you just take the little Fit Finder quiz.
It takes
2 seconds. They have half cup sizes. They have every conceivable size and shape that'll make you feel comfortable. You deserve some TLC. That's Third Love Comfort. Go to thirdlove.com/Dax now to get 20% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/Dax for 20% off today. He's an armchair expert. He's an armchair expert. Yes, so sorry. All my fault. I had packed up all the gear to go to Seattle, and then I came down to the attic to record and realized it was all back up in my suitcase, and I had to set it all back up. I'm so sorry. 1,000 apologies.
No worries. No worries. That was only one apology, but not 1,000. I'll take it, though.
Yeah, in general, people don't receive apologies very often, do they? Can you think of the last time someone, like, called you up and gave you a sincere, "Hey, Daryl, listen, man, I thought it over, and I was out of line. I'm sorry."
That's a really good question. I don't think that's a thing anymore. I think we just let it roll off the sleeve, and then you see that person the next time, and you're just like, ah, we're over it.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know that because I'm sober, so I have to give people apologies all the time. And often I recognize as I'm giving them an apology, like, oh, they haven't heard one of these in a decade. Where are you at? Are you in North Carolina?
Yeah, I'm at home. We are in Concord, North Carolina.
Yeah, so when I was reading about you today, I discovered that you were from Concord. And then my first thought was, do you know the Avett brothers?
I don't want to say I've met them once, but I don't know them. Obviously, I know of them. But Jimmy Johnson, who we all know of, is a really big Avett Brothers fan.
Yeah.
He knows them really well.
I don't even care if that's your cup of tea musically. It'll become your cup of tea if you see them live.
That's cool. I'll definitely have to put that on the list. Funny, now that it's kind of coming back, I played golf with their manager.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we have a connection there.
So you play golf as well?
I have some golf clubs, yes. Yes, yes. It's so frustrating. I've been playing on and off for about 7-8 years now and just picked it back up like about early last year, just like heavily.
COVID.
Yeah, you had time to do it. And then getting back into it, getting your buddies to get out there. So now we have like a whole group that's like, hey, you want to play golf today?
Uh-huh.
We're getting out there.
Now, have you played with your new boss yet?
No.
Really quick. Hold on, Monica. You know who his new boss is?
Mm-mm.
MJ. Michael Jordan.
What?
See, now she's excited. Yeah, yeah, she just went from like NASCAR. She was like, well, wait, NASCAR thing we're doing? But now she's in.
For a second, I thought...
Michael Jackson.
Yes, and I was like, how?
From the other side
how
of the
How do I react? Yeah. And how is that possible?
No.
Whoa.
MJ, the GOAT. Yes, yes. So we were down in Daytona to kick off the season, and we were sitting there. He had rented out a motorhome, and so we were on the backstretch. I think we were watching the truck race, and they were right there on the backstretch. Super cool. We were hanging out, having dinner, and we were talking about golf, and he says, just out of the blue, you golf, right? I was like, yeah, sometimes. He's like, I heard you suck. And I was like, oh, no. So that golf conversation, it slowly was like, yeah, I guess I don't. Next conversation. So. I have not golfed with him.
You're Michael Jordan. Ask me if I golf.
Do you golf?
Yeah, about as good as you race cars.
Ooh, wow. I see. That was the first moment of the first day I met him.
That's aggressive.
I don't know, though. Did you watch Last Dance? That's kind of how he responds.
That's how, yes.
Steve Kerr was like, you're going to beat my ass, but you're going to get a fight.
That's true. That's true. That's a good point. I like that. I'll put that in the back pocket.
Now, we'll get to MJ because that's such an exciting development. But you were born in Mobile, Alabama, and then you relocated to Concord. How long were you in Mobile?
2 years. So from birth to 2 years old. So I don't remember one thing about it.
Sure. And so Concord's home.
Concord's home. Yep.
So I'm from Detroit. All I ever wanted to do was race. Yep. Single mother. Just was not going to happen on our budget. We couldn't buy a go-kart. We couldn't do any of the baby steps. So how did you get into it?
Yeah. So the neighborhood we moved into from Mobile right there in Concord, my dad had a go-kart, like one that he would go and race.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had no interest, didn't even know what anything was. He just had it. And I remember we used to go to my elementary school, like on the weekends, and he would park at the gate. It's one of the gates that's like the long swinging arms, both sides. You could just walk underneath.
Yeah.
And we would park at the gate and unload the go-kart and push it under the gate, and he would go make laps in the parking lot.
Uh-huh.
I remember that.
Uh-huh.
And I would sit there and watch, and it was way too fast, and I was like, nope. I'm ready to go back and play tag and hide and go seek with friends in the neighborhood. And so I remember going to the racetrack with him and not watching one race, but I knew he went three times and that he flipped all three times.
On a cart? So,
wow.
Yeah, in a cart. Yeah,
that's hard to do.
The open carts, if you wheel hop somebody,
you run up
on a back wheel, it's easy to launch off somebody doing that. So fast forward about, I would say I was probably 5 or 6 at that time. Fast forward 3 or 4 years later, we moved to a new house, still in Concord, and my dad had bought a Harley Davidson, and the guy who fixed it up for him, he raced go-karts, and he invited us to come out and watch him. We got to know him, really good family friend. Invited us to come out and watch one weekend, and my dad was used to it, obviously, and he was like, man, what do you think? You want to try it? And I was like, sure, why not? And so we went out and bought a champ kart, which is one with a roll cage.
Oh, okay.
And went racing, and that was that.
I don't want to get too esoteric today, which I'll be inclined to do. Was the dad racing a shifter car or like a push and go?
No, push and go. You just...
Okay. And then the one you started in was not a shifter either?
No. Okay. I've only driven a shifter like just for fun, like once or twice. And those things are a beast.
I have one, and I think it's the funnest thing I've ever driven in my life. It's
it's a hell of a workout. My goodness.
There's a lot going on.
Yes, for sure.
So when you got in the car at 9, was it something that you immediately loved? Or was driving fun, but the competition element was intimidating? Like, how did it roll out?
It was just super, like, really fun. Like, our first race was a national event down in Jasper, Florida. 300, 400 carts. Like, we bought the go-kart on Friday, and it was like, hey, we're going to Florida tomorrow to race. It's like, oh, shit. All right. Okay. And I got beaten and banged up and just, like, the cart was mangled. But I asked my dad, like, hey, can we fix it and go back out? And he was like, yeah, sure. And from that point on, I didn't have any fear. I didn't really necessarily know what we were doing, but we practiced a lot. Like, we were at the track, like, almost every day, just running laps, logging laps, and setting up cones to show you where to run and whatnot. I actually almost killed my dad. They were standing on the racetrack and had a cone here and had a cone there, just run around this cone, whatever. Well, I guess it was late in the day and I forgot what to do and ran over the cone and my dad.
Oh,
he went like, yeah, he went like 30 feet in the air, he says,
my
and
God.
Landed on his back. And he was like, ah, I'm still alive. We're good. So he got back up, hobbled his way, and it was like, let's keep going. So, yeah, that was that.
Was he really pushing you to, like, he was really excited that you were into it?
Yeah, he was. At first, for the longest, it may have been, I was living out his dream.
Yeah.
Of racing carts and everything. But I quickly adapted to it and really loved it from the traveling standpoint, from the competition standpoint. It was super tough, but just continued to do it. Year after year, we were progressing and getting better.
You maybe just gave me like a little glimpse of my future, which is my daughter's 8. And I'm like, it's probably cart time. I think we're there. She drives a Razor. She rides a motorcycle. And I'm like, I think But I'm trying to, I'll be trying to walk that line between, like, because this is the childhood I wanted, of course. So I'm trying to, like, let her lead, but it's hard. I just want to throw her in there and go, like, you got this.
Just expose her to it. Just be like, hey, let's go to a go-kart race.
Yeah.
And then let's see what she says from there.
With any luck, she'll plow through me at 80 miles an hour send me up in the air. So that was pretty young, 9, 10. So that's elementary school. Did you dig the scene that surrounded that? Like, you're with other kids that are into the same thing. I guess what I'm curious about is, like, what was your scene at school, in elementary school in Concord, versus what was your scene when you were traveling and racing?
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of friends both at the racetrack and at school. As you started to do it more and you get older, your family becomes bigger at the racetrack just because you're there every weekend. You see those same familiar faces more than you see at school or even at home, your own family. But back then, we would, at the racetrack, we were playing football. We were off out in the woods, down in the creek at the racetrack.
Uh-huh.
Like minutes before racing. And I remember my dad multiple times yelling and running, let's go, you're going to miss the race. You know, chewing our ass because we were late. Uh-huh. But we all made it. We all had fun. It was showing up and having a good time. Had no obligations. We were just there. You had to go practice, qualify, and race. In the meantime of those three events, you were hanging out, having fun with your buddies, whatever it was.
Yeah. And your mom's like a crazy athlete, right? She competed on some college level athletically?
Yeah, she ran track at University of Tennessee, yep.
And are they both from the South originally?
Yeah, so my dad's from Nashville, my mom is from Knoxville, so both Tennessee.
And so when you were having fantasies as a little kid, was like the karting just an activity you did, or did you have dreams of being a race car driver?
No, I played basketball when I was 5 to 8, following my sister's footsteps. She had started basketball. I don't know when she started, but she was a baller, always going to national events with her and tournaments and everything. So my life was at the gym. So it just felt natural. It felt right to go there and be a basketball player. And then racing came about. And so that quickly shifted gears. And I never watched NASCAR, never thought about being a race car driver. I dressed up as Halloween. My uncle raced Nashville Fairgrounds. He did some super truck stuff, late model stuff. That was it. So I dressed up as a race car driver for Halloween, but didn't do it because I wanted to be a race car driver. I just, hey, this is cool.
Yeah.
I'll wear my uncle's fire suit. And it was like 10 times my size at that point. It was swallowing me, of course, but we enjoyed it.
It was probably the good kind of fire suit with real asbestos in it, too.
Yeah, exactly. It was old school for sure. The open face helmet. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yes. we were at the go-kart track. My dad asked me, up until that point, it was never even a thought.
Yeah. I think that's preferred.
Yeah.
I think it's a better way to go through it. Like them being so singularly driven on, am I on pace? Am I hitting this marker? Am I hitting that marker? Right.
Yeah, I'm figuring out everything. Every race is, I'm obviously 17, 18 years into my career, but every race is a new opportunity to learn something.
Yeah. So eventually you get like damn good, right? I think you're 16 or so and you're in the Bandoleros.
Bandoleros. Yeah, we were 11. 10 or 11 at the time. Yeah.
Okay, and you won like 35 of 48 races or 38 of 45 or something?
Yeah, 35 out of 48. Yeah, I think that's the number.
Okay.
38 out of 45 sounds better, though, so I might do it.
Yeah. Well, if I say it enough, it'll find its way to Wikipedia, probably.
Yeah. So
maybe
that
by the time you retire, it'll be like 43 out of 44 races.
Yeah. I only ran five, but I won 40 races. Yeah, something like that.
Okay, now, so winning feels good. Like, at that point, does anything? Sorry about this glare behind me. It's fucking brutal.
Oh, you're good. Okay. You're good.
Yeah, once you... Did I fuck
it
up worse?
Way worse.
Hold on one second. I'm going to do one thing. It's driving me nuts.
We were already late, and now we're doing this. This is embarrassing.
All good.
A little better, yeah. Oh,
yeah.
I mean, it was for him, not for me. Yeah, that didn't do anything. Fucking A. Okay, well, look, I gave it the college try. It's a little bit.
A for effort. Look,
marginally better. 43 out of 45.
There you go.
So when you start winning like that at 12, now are we starting to think like, shit, maybe I'll make a living at this?
No, I did not. It's so funny. We just race to race. When you go, say you're 9 and under, the 10 and unders are playing after you. And then if you're 10 and unders, the 11 and 12 and unders are after you. So you're always kind of exposed to like the bigger leagues, the next step.
Yeah.
And so that's how it was for us. So when I was racing a go-kart, Bandoleros were there, and that was like, whoa, those cars are cool.
Wait, can I get a little more info on the Bandolero?
Yeah, so it's like a quarter-size car. It has like 35 horsepower, Briggs and Stratton motor in it. So you could go about 50 to 60 miles per hour.
Oh, wow, at 11.
Yeah, go-kart, you're about 30 miles an hour, depending on track you go to as well. But Bandoleros were bigger size, not full-size car, but roll cage, body on it and everything. Go-kart, you're super exposed. I had a roll cage around me. So I moved into the Bandoleros, and I was like, all right. Hung up the go-karts, put them on the wall, put them on the shelf, and went Bandolero racing. Well, you start going to some Bandolero races that had legend cars there, which was a little bit bigger car. They're basically a street bike or a Kratzrocket on four wheels. Same motor, 1,200cc motor, just four wheels. Super hard to drive. The power-weight ratio is a lot of fun. The big tracks, we get to about 90 miles an hour, 100 maybe at the really big tracks. So like I'm saying, you're exposed to every level. So when I was doing Bandoleros, I'm like, all right, we're getting good at it. And my dad would be like, all right, we've kind of maxed out on this. Hey, what about a legend car? And I'm like, okay, sure, let's do it. Uh-huh. You know, I never seen it as, okay, if after a legend car, will we go late model? And after late model, will we go to NASCAR?
You did what was in front of you.
Yes, exactly.
I'm jumping ahead now, but it's interesting to me that you have depression with that mental mindset, because I feel like that right there is the antidote to depression, which is like, if you can just be doing the thing in front of you and not obsessing about what's ahead of you or behind you, that's like the sweet spot of where you'd want to be.
Yeah, I'm a very realistic person. Some people may call it pessimistic, but I just call it how I see it. I don't bullshit anything. I'm very much in the moment person, yes. But it's so hard when you have other people having these expectations for you and you don't meet them. And you kind of start to latch on to those expectations. And then when you fail, that's when the drop comes. That's when it's like, what happened? And you start to shut everything out.
Yeah, because you would aim as a human to be in the process business, like in the driving business. That's what you're in. But everyone around you is in the results business, as are you. You are, unfortunately, in the results business in the most epic, measurable way possible. And I would imagine, I too am a pessimist, but I hate disappointing people. So even if I could be in the moment and just try to enjoy the race for the race, once people were disappointed and it was on my shoulders, that would devastate me, I think.
Yeah, no, it's super tough. I have a lot of moments inside the car where when you're not performing at your peak level, you start to, one, have self-doubt. And then that creates you being a hater of yourself, you being one of those people that you try to shut out.
Yeah.
And expectations come. It's like, well, we should be running here. We should be doing this. You suck. You're not good. Why are you doing this? I've had those moments for sure. And that just drives you into a really dark place and it sucks. And I'm with you. I don't like disappointing people either, but I'm still trying to grasp on to, I don't care what people think. It's tough. It's tough to say that and back that up 100%. Yeah. At times I can do it. I can wake up and be like, I don't give a damn. But then other times it's like, I don't give a damn. I kind of do, you know?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't be human if you were totally in a vacuum.
Right. That's true. We all have feelings. No matter how tough we play the hard role or whatever you want to be, the competitor role. We talked about apologizing earlier. We don't apologize much, but then at the end of the day, it's like, damn, an apology would be nice.
Yeah.
Or I should have apologized.
If the log had been kept of the sentences I've said to myself in my head over the last 46 years, the number one would be, you're such a piece of shit. That's probably like the most, that's queued up at all times. Like, fuck, you're such a piece of shit. And it is funny, like, this is why I've not responded well to coaching, I think, in my life, is that I'm way more mad at me than you could ever be. I'm more disappointed than you could ever be.
100%. I am the same way. People are frustrated and I'm like, yeah, well, you don't know how frustrated I am with myself.
Yes, okay? Step in here if you want to experience true frustration.
That's it. Jeez. It's so funny. You always ask people to like walk in your shoes. I don't know if you can live in this mental mindset. Yeah, and it's tough.
It's a double-edged sword, though. All your superpowers come from that as well.
That's very true. So being able to compartmentalize things, you know, people ask me, what's one of your strengths? When I was a kid, I'm like, going fast. I don't know.
Yeah.
But now you've had a lot of time to reflect and talk about things and deal with high stress situations and still go out and perform. And I label it as compartmentalizing things. We're focused on this podcast right now. Mm-hmm. But if I have a race in the next hour, I'll worry about that when that hour comes. And try not to have too much on the plate.
Yeah. Now, did you watch the Tiger documentary, Tiger Woods?
I have not. I need to add that to the list.
Oh, my God.
I haven't watched that yet. I forgot all about it.
It's phenomenal.
Now I'm frustrated with myself. I disappointed you. See?
You want to talk about a master of compartmentalization, like on another level.
I can only imagine.
So what he does is there's all these periods of no activity, a tremendous amount of thought where I would psych myself out. Like the 20 minutes before you tee up, you know, and then between each shot. Whereas you're active nonstop. So it's like you can get in your head, but also there's a turn coming up every 7 seconds. Yet on the spectrum of racing, there is more time in NASCAR than probably any other racing to get in your own head, right? Because there's like, I'm super into Formula One.
Yep. Yep.
It's a 70-minute race generally. It's 60 to 70 laps or whatever it is, 45 to 70 laps. And it's generally 13 to 19 turns. And so things are happening so fast. There's no real rhythm. And what you're doing, you're out there for 400 laps, sometimes more, and repeating a lot of the stuff. So yeah, I would imagine on the spectrum, you are like in between golf and Formula One as far as opportunity to spiral.
For NASCAR, I mean, we have the stage breaks, we'll have a debris caution, whatever it may be. And so you have time. It's like, whew, it's hot. Whew, you suck. Why aren't you doing better? You know?
Yes.
And so you do have a lot more time. And even like Super Speedway coming up Talladega, as crazy as that is, middle of 4 wide, whatever it is, 5 wide at times.
Yeah.
You still have time to think like, what's for lunch later? What's for dinner later? It's like, snap out of it. You know? So I definitely need to do a better job at that. But look, it's up to us. You have to be mentally strong to just, hey, turn left, hit this mark, turn left. Just stay focused. Don't let the outside influence what's going on inside.
Well, that's what's weird. And I think for people who aren't into racing, to them, it probably all appears the same. But it is so fascinating, the different skill sets required for each kind. So as we just talked about, like Formula One has its own things. They're like managing all this tech, like what tires they're going to run and what time they're going to pedal. There's just so many chess movements going on.
Yep.
But yours is, you're in that car for so long, And it is a war of attrition, a NASCAR race.
Wait, how long?
No doubt.
400 laps, 600 laps.
Oh, my God.
They'll race for, what, 3 hours sometimes?
Oh, my God.
3 hours. The Coke 600 is the longest race, and it's about 4.5 hours.
Ooh,
4 hours.
Oh, my God.
So imagine staying focused from here to your drive to Vegas.
Oh.
Like 1,000% dialed in.
Oh, that makes so much more sense. I was like, you're thinking about how hot it is? I don't understand, but
okay.
Yeah, 4 hours.
So the heat is a big factor. So in the middle of the summer, we'll get to about 150 degrees in the car.
Ah.
Yeah, but we're there for 4 hours, 4.5 hours, whatever it may be. You got cautions, you got red flags, depending on the situation. So you have time to stop at a rest area, stop at a gas station, do what you got to do. We can't use the bathroom. I don't use the bathroom.
You don't have a catheter or anything?
No, I don't think anybody does.
No one does. Well, do people just piss in their race suit then?
I've heard people doing that. I think it's been a long time since that. I haven't thrown up, but people have thrown up and they're and just keep going.
Ah!
Daryl, I can barely make it through one of these interviews without having to piss. There's just absolutely no way I could fucking do it. I'd need an option.
It's tough. It's super tough. But when you put a concrete barrier around you and you're like, if you hit, this motherfucker's gone. It's going to hurt when you hit.
Sure.
That brings up that attention span just another couple notches. It's like, hey, don't hit that. Do whatever you have to do to not hit that.
This is what I want to say to Monica. Okay, so you're leaving Los Angeles and you're going to race to Las Vegas. And then you also know, throughout my trip to Las Vegas, there's going to be about 7 wrecks. I will be involved. There will be 6 or 7 major accidents on the road I'm on. Wow. And so I got to try to think about, where are those going to happen? What little pack should I be in? Should I be in the lead the first 150 miles? Is that useful? Or should I just hang in the middle? At what point have I hung back too far? Now I'm lapped. Their chess, and maybe I'm wrong, your chess game is like, how do I position myself so that in the last 100 laps of this race, I'm where I'm supposed to be?
Yeah, you know, especially with speedway racing. So, Monica, I encourage you to watch this weekend at Talladega.
Okay.
Just because it's like a traffic jam. So it's like the heart of Los Angeles there, rush hour, but going 200 miles an hour.
Oh, my God. I can't. This
like
is so
four lanes, and when one wrecks, damn near all of us.
Yeah.
Because the packages that we have on the cars, like the brake packages, we're going for the top speed, the most minimal drag. So we have the smallest brake packages on there. The cars are super trimmed out. So when you hit the brakes, it ain't going to stop like it would stop at, say, a track called Martinsville, where we were at 2 weeks ago, where we had the biggest brake package and the stopping power is 10 times better.
Yeah.
So when there's a wreck up there, you have to do your best at keeping it under control, missing cars. Oh, yeah, it's wild.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then when that happens, you go, okay, so there's one, and there's going to be three or four more coming my way.
When's the next one happen? Yeah. And you don't know.
Wow.
You're literally just cruising there the whole time, and you're like, I'm going to play the safe route here, not be aggressive, and the next thing you know, you're wrecked. You're done.
Oof.
Yeah, we interviewed Daniel Ricciardo, and he was saying his move is basically like he's got to be a fucking silverback for 1 minute. Like, that's what he tells himself. Like, my real commitment is to be an animal that first minute, and then I'm going to be in my position, and then I got to protect my position. Hopefully, I can move my way up. But the craziness is that first minute, whereas yours is just like so extended, and you don't even know when to turn on the silverback, I wouldn't imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have restarts. I'm guessing he was talking about the initial start.
Yeah.
It has to be a silverback. Ours is definitely that, but we have at least 3 restarts throughout the race. That's without cautions. And so then when you have green flag pit strategy come through, it's like, okay, now it's time to get back after it and be a silverback again. To his quote there, it's like we have a lot of times where we have to muscle up and get after it.
Yeah.
Oof.
Stay tuned for more Armchair Expert, if you dare.
We are supported by Credit Karma. Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions, and now they want to help even more. With a Credit Karma money spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits.
Who doesn't want instant gratification? If you're looking for satisfaction, there's no need to wait. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. When you use your Credit Karma Money debit card, you can win daily instant karma purchase reimbursements on items of up to $5,000. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot, and your instant karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. Credit Karma Money. Progress starts here. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated. Member balance and transfer limits apply. We are supported by KiwiCo. KiwiCo is my favorite kids product.
It's so great. The other day, all the kids were just doing it for hours.
Yeah, we had like four extra kits. And we just threw them to them like a pack of wolves. And they all tore into them and they all made them. What the most fun part for me was watching the older kids help the younger kids build theirs. Oh, it's so sweet because it gives you confidence to be able to open a box, see all these parts, and then assemble them into something. But then to also be able to teach somebody is also such a confidence booster. Look, spring is here and summer is just around the corner. Why not gift your young innovators with super cool STEAM projects to celebrate the end of the school year? With a KiwiCo subscription, your child gets a new crate full of fun science and art projects every month. For trailblazing toddlers to more experienced explorers in every stage in between. I love them. The directions are so simple. Both of my daughters can build these things. And by the way, I'm nervous they're not going to be able to.
Oh my gosh, me too.
Also, summer's upon us, you know, and they're not going to be stuck on those computers doing Zoom, thank goodness. And so now they can actually get busy with their hands, get creative, get curious. They'll explore new worlds and rediscover familiar ones, even without leaving home, from sailing to the solar system to building an animation machine and more. Everything's shipped right to your door, and there's no commitment, so you can pause or cancel anytime. As a parent, it's hard to find creative ways to keep your kids busy and screen-free while stretching their brain, especially now. KiwiCo does the legwork for you so you can spend more quality time tackling projects together. There's something for kids of all ages. The best part, watching their confidence grow as big as their smile. With KiwiCo, there's something for every kid or kid at heart every month. Get 30% off your first month plus free shipping on any crate line with code DAX at KiwiCo.com. That's 30% off your first month at KiwiCo, KiwiCo.com. Promo code DAX.
Okay, this is dicey, especially as you as a representative of NASCAR and me as someone who's sponsored by NASCAR. Is there ever any talk about shortening those races?
Yes. Yes.
I feel like they'd be more appealing because my issue sometimes with them is like the 600 can't watch it.
Right.
Because the first 400 or 500 laps doesn't really tell me much about who's going to win the race. It's just kind of like watching practice. And then the race starts with 100 laps left or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's kind of a battle of attrition for that race. It's like, who's going to last the longest?
It's like an off-road race at that point.
Basically, yeah. It for sure is. It damn sure feels like it too. Yeah. We had two races at Michigan last year. Obviously, during the pandemic, it was a Saturday-Sunday deal. The distances were perfect. It was like a two-hour race or hour-and-a-half race, done.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to the series director, and I was like, dude, this is ideal.
This feels good.
He's like, yeah, don't count on that. TV and now not going to happen. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Whatever.
But yeah. I guess that's what makes it distinct is the long distance element of it. Otherwise, what's the difference between that and Formula One? It'd be the same thing.
Yeah, but the thing is NASCAR was for all of my childhood. And I used to work for General Motors, so we were constantly at tracks. I won't bore you with the details of that, but there was a point where NASCAR was the biggest spectator sport in the entire world.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Like the Coca-Cola 400, which I had gone to, I want to say there's like 200,000 people can sit in there or something. Like you're looking around going, this bigger than 90% of the cities in America.
Yeah, it's super cool.
But it has been in decline for the last, I don't know, however many years. And so there's all these interesting strategies to kind of revitalize it. So one is you guys do more road courses now, right, than you used to do?
Yeah, we have seven. I think we have seven on the schedule versus three last year. Yep.
Okay, so a road course, Monica, is instead of going in the oval, turning left all day long, mm-hmm. they'll be on an oval for some portion. Then they come down into an infield. There's left, there's right. Then it's like Formula One. It's left, right, left, right.
Yeah.
Which do you prefer?
If you've seen my road course career, you would know I do not prefer road courses. I am an oval type guy. Man, it's so frustrating. Now, the worst thing about it is I love road courses. It's so fun. Like, it changes up. It's different.
Yeah.
We have 36 races, so 29 of those are on ovals. Different types of ovals, but same thing at the end of the day. So it's like, ooh, we get to go turn right. And then I go like, oh, shit. We got to go turn right. I don't know how to do that. And I struggle. And it's like, ah.
Yeah.
So it's funny. We're actually going to road course school at the end of the week here. So yeah, good times.
Although I wonder if you mentally on those road course days, even though you're pissed that you're not performing at the level you'd like to, you have to be so much more distracted by the driving though, right? In a good way?
No, you're actually more focused because there's so much more shit going on.
That's what I mean. I mean, distracted from life. It requires so much attention that it's a freedom from your thoughts.
Yes, it is. Until you run as bad as I do, and then I'm like, hey, you suck. You suck. Oh, shit. Oh, turn right here. Yes, yeah, so I'm doing a lot of stuff in the car and talking to myself. So if I could just have a good, solid weekend, which I'm hoping for. We go to COTA next here in about a month.
Oh, wait.
Which is you guys exciting. Yeah.
Is that your first time there?
First time. I'm so excited. Oh,
you've been
so
down fun. There, I assume. Yeah. Yeah.
I've made 15 laps on a moped.
Oh.
I went for MotoGP weekend, and they were like, hey, go take the moped out. I'm like, all right.
Are you a big MotoGP fan?
So I got into it more. I don't follow it like I do F1.
Yeah.
But, dude, those guys are studs.
They're the number one. They're the number one studs on the planet.
They're the alphas.
Oh,
for sure. We'll give them that title.
It's insane.
My gosh. I don't know how they do it. I mean, you ever watched a MotoGP race, Monica?
I probably watched tiny portions when Dax is watching, but no.
I think I made you watch Valentino kick Marquez. Like
I think you made me watch like a horrible incident where one was almost hit another one, flying off.
Last season when Valentino, the bike went behind him and in front of him.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yeah. I remember that. That was scary. But rubbing elbows while you're going 200 miles an hour. Nope. I'm good.
I was going to tell you the whole reason I'm into taking the bikes to the track is it's the only time in my entire life that I cannot think of one other thing. It can't be done. Like, you just have to just be so fucking focused on what you're doing.
Yeah.
Or you go down immediately. Yeah. Like, there's no room for it.
No doubt. Do you ride?
Yeah, yeah. I go to the track all the time on the motorcycle. I had a rough year last year in quarantine. Had a few surgeries as a result of it. But
No.
But I do. I love it so much. It's just.
That's cool.
Yeah.
What do you have?
I had an R1 that was stolen 4 months ago. And then I have a Gixxer track bike, and then I have some Ducatis.
Cool.
Do you ride?
Yeah, I'm a low and slow. I got a couple Harleys. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Which ones do you have?
I have a Street Glide CVO, both 2020s, and then a Lowrider S, so like a basically like a little Sportster, which is so fun.
Yeah, that's the look out here in LA. If you're going to ride a Harley, you got to ride a Sportster, cafe style.
Yeah.
Okay, back to what the hell were we talking about? Just NASCAR racing. Okay.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, so they've added a bunch of road courses to make it exciting, which it has. And then dirt track, which is bonkers. How is the dirt track, Bubba?
Yeah, next question. I won on the dirt track 2014 in the truck, so I enjoyed it, but man, it was so tough to see. I don't know if you've seen any highlights from that, but like, you couldn't see. Like, it was so much dust. So the visibility, you were driving blind. There were so many wrecks because it was just like putting your hand over your eyes and driving.
Yeah.
And it's like, figure it out. And so from a technical standpoint, it was tough. But from driving, like, we were running seventh there with a few laps to go and got our left rear tire cut. And that ended our day. But it was fun. But it was like golf. It was fun straighting. Very fun and frustrating at the same time.
Yeah, the visibility is okay. It just sounds like I'm trying to impress you now, but I also raced off road and I had a night race one time and my navigator, the visibility was so fucking bad in the car. I couldn't see anything in front of me. So I turned to the right to like look at my navigator. I could not see him. He's as close to me as Monica is. And no one can see the nav on the dash. So I was like, who's kidding who here? We're just pinned in the desert. Something will happen or it won't.
Yeah. But,
and you're like, yeah, this is not being able to see is not fun.
No, it's not. It's like terrifying.
It is.
What's on the other side of this obstacle that's in front of us?
This is a nightmare. Yes. That's like literally someone's nightmare. Like not being able to see.
You at least do it like for an occupation and a living. When I was in that situation, I'm like, why am I in this situation? Like, what is my ego? What is my ego desire?
Like, yeah, that's when you start questioning, is this really something I should be doing? Yeah.
It's not fun at all. It's just so I can tell people I did it. That's the only reason I'm doing this.
Yeah, we've been there. Ego takes over a lot.
So, okay, so in the effort to spice up NASCAR, these things have all happened. But I do think some shorter races might be an interesting just experiment to see if people with less of an attention span might want to.
Well, our generation now, my generation, our attention spans aren't there. It's just like, man, we got to keep up with the times here, you know?
Yeah.
And we've done some things, you know, bringing in the stage racing, broken things up. So it gives you like a... like halftime, basically, for us. Go to concession stands, get whatever you want, come back, and then we fire back up the race. So that's been good.
Yeah, that's cool. You've raced three series, the Xfinity Series, the Camping World Truck Series, and the Cup Series. First of all, I don't know the difference between Xfinity and Cup. They're both NASCARs, right?
They're both cars, but they're smaller. Like, the body shape is a little bit different. The technical, like the aerodynamic standpoint, there's a lot less downforce on the Xfinity cars than there is a Cup car. So some say it's a little bit more challenging to drive an Xfinity car, but then the competition in the Cup level supersedes that because, dude, it is so tough in the Cup series. So tough.
So if you had to say you had a favorite, I mean, you've been really, really successful in the Truck series. Do you have a favorite of those three?
What I really want to do is accomplish, I got 6 wins in the Trucks. And I got 2 zeros in the Xfinity and Cup column. I need to change that.
And your age-wise, you're still pretty young for a NASCAR driver now.
27. Yeah. I'm one of the younger, in the Cup level, yeah, I'm one of the younger guys.
And who is your all-time hero?
That's tough. So I was always, my family was big-time Dale Sr. fans.
Yeah.
And so I kind of just inherited that. Again, I wasn't watching and I didn't really know. And I lived 15 minutes from the Speedway.
Uh-huh. I'm going to pause you really quick. So Monica, just remember, Ricardo uses the Intimidator's number and has it tattooed. Yep. Yeah.
So when we lost Dale in 2001, I kind of just naturally went to Dale Jr.
Uh-huh.
And so I was a fan of his and watching him. And so it was really cool to see him perform and compete and win. But then as I started getting closer to the Cup Series, say like the K&N Series or the truck level, you're at NASCAR races, you're at NASCAR, the Cup weekends. And so your exposure is a lot higher and you get to know guys. And it's like you run into Jimmy Johnson for the first time and he's like, hey, man, how's it going? How's your season going? You know, good luck. And it's like, whoa, this guy knows who I am. Like, that's pretty sick.
Yeah.
And then you get to the Cup level. I'll never forget when I was filling in the 43 guy driving, it broke his back. So I was called in to sub in and we were at Daytona in July and under caution, I was right next to Jimmy Johnson, and I was like, damn, this is cool, racing against every time.
Yes, fuck yes.
Super cool.
Yeah.
And so I've gotten to know Jimmy. Obviously, raced for Kyle Busch in the Truck Series. Kevin Harvick has been a big supporter of mine.
Do you know Matt Crafton, now that I'm seeing your TRD?
Yeah, old Crafton. Yeah, absolutely. We go way back.
We're in the dunes together all the time.
Oh, cool. That's awesome, yeah.
We have the same kind of sand rail at Tatum, and he runs the NASCAR motor in his fucking sand rail, which is so cool.
Oh, yeah, he's got it. Yeah, he's got it all. You know, he's been doing that for a long time. He's always asked, hey, you need to come out and join the dunes with us, so I may have to take him up on that one day.
Oh, it is the most fun you can have. Okay, so now a couple cool things that, well, let's get into some of the ways that they're evolving, thank God, outside of just adding road courses and whatnot. The most recent thing that happened was they finally said no Confederate flags at the races anymore. That was just a week ago, maybe?
No, this was almost a year ago.
Oh, I watched a race the other day and it felt like it was brand new. Okay, so it was a year ago.
So what happened at Martinsville, and Martinsville was 2 weeks ago. And so they could have been talking about last time.
Or that makes sense.
When we were here at Martinsville for the first time last year, that's when everything happened. So that could be that.
Yeah. I have to imagine your presence there has something to do with that.
Yeah, I mean, I ultimately called out NASCAR to get rid of the flag.
Yeah. You know? I feel like you're in a really, of all the sports that you would want to be vocal about BLM, like Lewis Hamilton is very, very vocal about BLM, gets to be very supported. It's not that big of a swing in Formula One to take that position. But NASCAR is a Southern tradition. There's never been a per capita flag flying event that had as many Confederate flags as probably previous NASCAR races. And so you're in a very precarious situation to be vocal about your beliefs, because I think the base generally is on the other side of that argument, or at least traditionally has been. When you've thought about being vocal and you've thought about the risk you'll take on, which again is so much more significant than doing it in the NBA, doing it anywhere, I would argue where you're doing it is probably the hardest place to do it.
Yeah.
What's that risk reward analysis look like in your head?
I don't know if there's much risk. Yeah, you're going to lose some fans, but so be it.
Mm-hmm.
The reward is revolutionizing the sport and changing it for the better. Like, that's huge. You know, that's going to be much bigger than any race win that I'll have. And accepting that is huge. Yeah, now, before last year, before all that stuff went down, I was getting introduced, hey, Bubba Wallace, driver of the 43, and getting a decent amount of cheers, and it was cool.
Yeah.
Now I'm right up there with Kyle Busch, sometimes more than Kyle Busch than on the booze, and I haven't even done anything on track to piss anybody off. And so I feel like it's more on a personal level, like personal hatred, that people, it's not like Kyle Busch, his attitude sometimes is people give him crap for that. Yeah, sure. All I've said was, hey, let's get rid of the Confederate flag and I'll start allowing more people. And all of a sudden I'm getting more boos. So that comes from personal hatred. I feel that's just for me speaking.
Yeah. Now, I imagine you were probably at the race that Michelle Obama came out. Everyone booed. Were you at that race?
No. When was that?
Well, it had to be while Obama was president. I guess that was probably 6 years ago. It was towards the end of his last term.
They all booed?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, talk about, okay, saying, like, let's add dirt tracks and let's do this and let's make it more appealing. Like, it's not appealing to younger generations if people are booing Michelle Obama, if people are waving a Confederate flag. Nobody wants, no one wants associations with that unless you're old and racist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that sounds like, what's that saying? Preaching to the choir. Preaching to the choir. Yeah, so it's tough.
I think people that aren't even NASCAR fans became aware of your name when the noose in the garage was found. It was all over every news outlet. And then, am I right in that it was later discovered that that had been there for a while, so it probably wasn't put there directly to fuck with you, but there must have been a pretty significant period of time where you were certain that is what happened.
Yeah, no doubt. When it's brought to your attention that there's a noose found, you're like, wow, there's no one allowed in the garage. There's no fans allowed. This was the first race back with fans. Who the hell? Was it a track worker? Was it somebody inside of our sport that did it?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, until Tuesday, and the FBI was like, hey, we found video evidence that, you know, this was there before. Okay, cool. But up until that time, it was like, who in the hell has done this?
Well, also, I think there's so many ways to look at this. The example we always give on here is like Rodney King. It's like, at first you go, oh, there's seven really racist officers that are doing this. And then you learn, oh, no, all 18 of them made the same police report when they got back to the station. Okay, so that tells us culturally that the culture of that police department is to protect that. So, oh, the whole system's kind of racist. So I do think it's telling that that's not out of consideration that that had been done intentionally. It's not like that would have been a huge stretch. I guess when it happened,
right. You're
like, yeah, I can definitely see someone pissed that their Confederate flag's being taken away.
Yeah, 2 weeks after the Confederate flag, yeah. And they called me ahead of time being like, hey, Talladega's going to have fans. We're going to have heightened security around your team and your car. Well, it's like, shit, you're already heightened awareness is a couple notches higher going into it.
Yeah.
And then this happens. It's like, what are the chances of this? Like, perfect storm.
Yeah, they're staggering that just happened to be in there. Now, the cool moment I saw was when everyone walked out. Mm-hmm. How'd that come about?
Jimmy Johnson led that, which was super cool. He fired up a group chat. We have a driver's group chat. And he said, hey, I don't know about you guys, but I'm planning on standing with Bubba today for the race. I got pretty emotional.
I bet.
Being a part of that. And then it was just like, it was like a snowball effect. A lot of guys were, me too. Yep, I'll be there, me too. And then it, all of a sudden it was like, hey, we're going to need a lot more room. And so I thought it was just the drivers. That's the crazy part. And then I get out of the car and then stand up on the roof. The video you see, I'll stand up on the roof and then immediately drop back down, is I see the whole entire garage is there. And I had no idea about that. He said, Jimmy said, man, I had team presidents, team owners, team managers calling me. How can we be evolved?
Wow.
Super cool.
I would imagine it's also not super easy to step into that role. I'm trying to imagine myself in your shoes, and it's like, we have all these different identities. Here's a component of my identity. Here's a bigger, but your full-time life and your full-time job and probably the bulk of your focus is like, I'm a race car driver and that's what I focus on and I train for it. And now I'm a representative of something. And that's like a whole different thing to shoulder. And I wonder if, is it easy or do you sometimes get like imposter syndrome? Like, oh my God, now I'm a civil rights leader. All because I said, let's get rid of this. Am I ready for this?
Yeah. Did I set out to be an activist? No, I didn't. But I was asked how I felt that day and what I think should happen and what change we should do. That's what came about. And one thing led to another. And so I'm not going to backtrack because of all the flack that I've gotten from it. I'm still going to encourage people to just be the best human being that you can be. Yeah. And for the ones that don't want to do that, then you need a life-changing experience. And whatever that may be, it's like, I don't understand what's so hard to just, you can disagree with people all day, it's fine, but you don't have to treat them like a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Because of what they say or what they look
like.
That's
our job.
Yeah, that's in our own heads. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I'm fully employed calling me a piece of shit. I don't need any help. Well, dude, yeah, the thing you walk away with is like, and this is so corny and cheesy, but it is true. There isn't a price you can put on integrity. There's no trophy that competes with integrity. And to your point, like Kaepernick, he's not the greatest football player that ever played, but he's as relevant mm-hmm. as all the greatest in the yep. most profound way, and should feel that way, should feel the mm-hmm. sense of accomplishment.
Yeah. I mean, the toughest thing for me is how everybody became aware of me through those incidents, Confederate flag and the noose. And it's like, it bugs the shit out of me because I've been trying to work my ass off on the racetrack to become a household name, you know?
Yeah.
And now it's just like superseded everything. And so now it's up to me with this new opportunity with MJ. And what we got going on now is to bring the on-track success up to here. So it's like, oh, he can back it up too.
Thank you. You just illustrated exactly what I was thinking I would feel like is like, part of me would be proud I spoke up, proud that I've been a part of this change. And then another part of me would be like, oh, fuck, I don't deserve this much recognition. I haven't podiumed mm-hmm. 12 times. Whatever yeah. my racket inside of hating myself would yeah. be, that
but
would
that's
be.
That's not yeah. what I want attention for.
Exactly.
Exactly. And people want to label me as the attention-seeking guy. And it's like, no,
yeah,
I'm not. I want to win.
Yeah.
That is my number one priority. But when it comes to me using my platform and encouraging others and people that watch me, it's like, hey, just do good, do the right thing.
Yeah.
That's just me talking. That's yeah. not me attention seeking. That's just what?
No. Yeah. You're not a proselytizer. You're someone that answered honestly to some questions. There's a huge difference.
That you have a right to speak to.
Yes. It's not like I'm just jumping on a bandwagon mm-hmm. of some crazy story. Like, I've lived some of the experiences. I've been through that. I've been through the discrimination. I've lost a family member to police violence. I've lived it.
Yeah. Okay, now let's talk about MJ. Let's talk about Michael Jordan getting involved. He one time was into MotoGP as well.
He had a superbike.
Yeah, I remember I rode on the two-seater MotoGP bike with Randy Mamola at Laguna Seca. And I said, am I going to fit on the back? Like, am I going to fit back there? I'm 6'3". And he's like, yeah, Michael Jordan was fine back there. You'll fucking fit. Get on the bike. And I was like,
that's funny.
Holy shit, MJ yeah. rode on the back of this thing. That's yeah. crazy.
Wow, that's insane.
Yeah, so he loves motorsports, huh?
He does. He's been a huge motorsports fan, and it's really cool to hear his passion behind it and hear like his stories of going to Talladega, going to Richmond, going to Rockingham, going to Darlington, and attending the races. And I'm like, that's badass.
Yeah.
And it's also fun to hear his knowledge of what he sees on the racetrack and stuff. Like, two cars get together and I'm like, man, I can't believe that one car did this. And he was like, no, it was the other guy's fault. And I'm like, what? And then I have to explain it to him and he's like,
Oh, okay. I get it. Yeah. So no, it's super cool having him involved, and he's competitive, but having Denny as a co-owner there, it definitely manages the expectations and levels everything out. So it's not like MJ's here. We got to win. We got to win 5 championships. We got to match the NBA success. It's like, oh, this is a whole different ballgame. Pun intended.
Yeah. I have a really hard time asking for advice. I've had a hard time finding mentors.
You and I are the same. You and I are the same.
And I've paid the price for it. I've paid the price. I could have been better at so many things if I would have asked for help, been vulnerable. So I wonder, like, with this amazing opportunity, of course, he doesn't know a fucking thing about racing, but he does know something about that mental racket, man. He knows something about harnessing all 100% of what you have at your disposal. Like, is there a way to, like, have him mentor you? Is there something he can give you? I'm wondering.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And we're only 9 races in. Getting through the hardships and the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows of everything, it's like, okay, let's get settled in first, and then we'll have that conversation over dinner one night or whatever it may be at the golf course when I don't suck anymore.
Maybe you can drive the golf cart and just go out with
him. Oh, yeah. I'll be his caddy. Yeah, exactly. But having those conversations, like, those have yet to come. And I've been the same way. I'm a very, there's a new challenge in front of me. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to figure it out. Mm. And you mess up. And it's like, all right, let me try something else. And you mess up. Oh, let me try something else. Ah, figured it out. That's how I am. I don't go to somebody, hey, how do you conquer this challenge? It's basically, I feel like you're cheating.
Yeah.
It's like, no, go do the hard work and figure it out yourself.
I know, but, you know, I watch people around me who are able to humble themselves enough to ask for advice, and it works really well. In fact, one of the only times it ever happened to me was I was racing in this Super Trofeo series, this Lamborghini series, and one of our tracks was Fontana that had a bank, and I've never been on a bank at full speed. And so a dude in the Trofeo series, he is an ex-NASCAR driver, and I go, I'm on the bank. I'm like 5th gear flat. And he goes, no, 6th gear flat. And I'm like, no, you can't go 6th gear flat. There's just no way the car would stay in there. He's, get behind me on the next lap. We're going 6th gear flat. Sure enough, I would have never done that on my own. I needed to know that was humanly possible. It did not seem that the laws of physics would have allowed for that. And I thought, oh, my God, I asked him. Wow. Well, I saved myself so much.
Pat yourself on the back. You did something. You went against the grain. I love it. I'm the same way.
Oh, it's so hard same for way. Me. I'm embarrassed by it.
It's a sense of pride. And it shows, like, everybody's quick to put a label on somebody. And we adapt that mentally. It's like, who am I going to show signs of weakness here by asking? I'm not going to do that. Now I'm going to go figure it out.
Yeah, everything is like weakness. Every force in my life is avoiding looking weak in any way.
Yep, exactly. And it's like, damn, I should have just went to ask, because now I'm pissed off and I'm telling myself that I sucked. I should have just asked them, hey, are you 5th or 6th gear here? Ah, okay, got it.
I mean, it's part of it is because these specific sports are very hyper masculine.
Macho.
Yes. Yeah, so it's probably an extra weight to ask, or it feels like, oh, it's not manly or something, which is so silly. And it's wasting all of your time. But
well, even if we just kind of talked about it, like, they're already doing the most dangerous hyper-masculine thing. They're getting in an accident every other weekend. And then all of their hobbies, like Robbie Gordon. Okay, so on my free time, I'm going to race Baja 1000. I'm going to do the biggest jump at Glamis. Like, I'm going to go prove in all these other departments that I'm the most fearless motherfucker.
Never enough. It's never enough.
Yeah. I relate.
Yeah, you're fueled off of adrenaline. That's what pushes us. That's it.
Stay tuned for more Armchair Expert, if you dare.
We are supported by HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get fresh pre-measured ingredients and mouthwatering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. And that's why it's America's number one meal kit. Monica, what did you prepare yourself?
Okay, so the other night I made a pork chop and it had a creamy lemon pan sauce. It was like a really kind of light sauce and it had broccoli and farro. It felt so complete, but like perfect in my body, not too heavy.
Well, I went heavier, as you might expect.
Sure.
Nacho pork burgers.
Ooh.
With roasted jalapeno cheese sauce,
crispy fried onions and sweet potato wedges.
Ooh, that sounds yummy.
HelloFresh cuts out stressful meal planning and grocery store trips so you can enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table in just about 30 minutes. HelloFresh's fresh ingredients are sourced directly from growers and delivered from the farm to your front door in under a week. Contact-free, of course. Go to HelloFresh.com/DAX12 and use code DAX12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/DAX12 and use code DAX12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. We are supported by Starbucks.
Oh, wow.
Welcome to the club, Starbucks. Of course, you probably call it Starbucks, but I have such an intimate relationship with Starbucks that I call it Starbucks.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, I love Starbucks.
Who doesn't?
Oh, everyone does. You walk in, the smell, boom. Mm. So excited to be there. Well, Starbucks Triple Shot Energy is an extra strength coffee beverage in a can. There's no Starbucks at my exit.
Yeah.
I'm on these road trips. I need my Starbucks. So what do? I go in there and I grab a Starbucks Triple Shot Energy. Mmm. My God, do they hit the spot. It's perfect to throw in my bag as well. I'll put one in my backpack. I'll bang one back, and then I'll throw one in my backpack for later in the day. 225 milligrams of caffeine. That hits the spot. Starbucks coffee that you love but ready to drink. Offered in classic flavors and now in zero sugar. I always offer zero sugar. Energy for you to do the things that matter to you. Four core flavors. Vanilla, delicious. Dark roast, yum yum. Cafe mocha and caramel.
Yum.
2 0 sugar flavors, black and vanilla. The vanilla is fantastic in its sugar-free form. I love it.
Yum.
Also dairy-free. What gives you energy? Find your Starbucks Triple Shot Energy online or at your local store. Okay, last thing I want to ask you about is... Just because I read this and I felt,
he laughed. I don't even know where he's going, but he laughed about this. So here we go.
Well, yeah, there's another area I thought maybe I really related to you, which is I can't do video games. Like as a kid, I bailed out at Nintendo. I was like kind of good at the first version. Then when there was too many buttons, I was out. Anyways, during COVID, they encouraged these guys, if I'm understanding this correctly, they encouraged these guys like, you guys should do this online, this like e-racing or whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
To keep fans kind of dialed in, right? So, well, you tell me, I don't know if you were forced or not, but sounds like you were probably forced.
So it was optional. Now it's definitely mandatory. I mean, it's a big deal. We actually have a race tomorrow night virtually. Talladega. But yeah, there's a software out there called iRacing, which is the most advanced video game simulation, whatever you want to call it. Like, it's really cool to be able to go out and especially jump on at night with your buddies and go have fun, bragging rights and whatnot. There are the simulation people that take it way too serious. And like, when I jump on there and I do something and they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, this is what you do in real life. No, you don't do it on the game. It's not real life. It's like, who are you to tell me what to do in real life?
Oh, here we go.
So it's a very fine line. And so I don't get on there much, but obviously the mandatory sessions we have to, but it did create throughout the pandemic break that we had, it created a lot of buzz around the sport, good and bad, really.
Yeah. But if I understand it correctly, he was in the middle of the race and said, fuck this. And
I got wrecked twice. So you only have two repairs. And I got wrecked twice in the first 15 laps. And I was like, I'm done. And the guy wrecked me on purpose. So I'm like, I don't have time for this. Okay. We spend hours throughout the week practicing and trying to get better, trying to be competitive. And then he wiped out. Done. It's like,
you spend hours on the simulation thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
And listen to this, though. And then when he bailed, he's like, I'm fucking out. People were like challenging his intent. Oh, my God. He's a quitter. It's like, hold on.
I
would not quit a real fucking
a race. Video game?
Yeah. Oh, you would quit a video game? Will you quit a real race? Like, oh yeah, lost a sponsor over it. Like,
oh awesome. My God. Yes.
I had to bring it up. Yeah. When I read that, I was like, oh my God, this is exactly what would happen to me
dude,
if I was forced
was
to do
so
this.
It was so ridiculous. But then you talked to like my girlfriend. She was like, well, I mean, you shouldn't have acted like a little kid. I'm like, there's no way around it. But the whole sponsorship deal, I could give two shits about because I never even used their product anyways, but dude, it was It was ridiculous.
Oh, I just, wow. The idea of like a racer losing a sponsor in an elect, in a fucking
But I don't
fake.
Like that they have to take time out to do this other thing.
Oh, but they weren't racing, right? Was it during like when the season?
No, this was totally nothing going on.
Yeah,
this
was in place. Right.
And so it was like, hey, let's go virtually race. And it's like, all right. Well, then you have people that do it every day and it's like, it's not really realistic. And so then you devote a lot of like 7-8 hours throughout the week just to race. And then you go and get wrecked in 20 minutes? Like, hell no, I'm out.
Oh my God. What's hilarious is I totally respect the people who are super into online gaming, and I think they are champions, and I'm impressed with what they
do.
Yeah,
no doubt. It's impressive.
The notion that someone who doesn't do that should hop in there and do it, and then there's some expectation that somehow you're disrespect. The whole thing, to me, it's just the cross-pollination that's hysterical. It just really is hysterical.
It is. You can laugh about it now. I was pissed off, like, for a while.
I'm sure.
That was my last race. I didn't race anymore after that. Well, then it became mandatory this year. I'm like, oh, here we go.
But see, that's what. So now they're making you do it, but you're still, now you're real racing and simulation racing, and that doesn't really seem fair. And also, what if you learn bad habits?
Yeah, you could fuck yourself up.
There is that, but at the same time, we're like, okay, this isn't like real life.
At least you know all the tracks. I guess that's one leg up you have.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, they tried to introduce that with MotoGP, like there's no races, and they're like, watch the guys fucking, and I'm like, oh, watch guys play a video game?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I'm attracted to the sport because someone might fly off the bike at 200. That's what's thrilling.
So morbid.
I'm just honest. Look, you're backing me into being a rights leader now for the morbid sector of the country.
Oh, I love it.
Well, Daryl Bubba Wallace, it's been really fun to watch your story. I actually think whatever thoughts you carry about whether you should or shouldn't have that attention, ultimately great for the sport. I think it got the sport a ton of attention, and I think it got
positive.
Positive, yeah. And yes. I think the steps that were taken as a result of your honesty and integrity are going to save that sport. So I think you should feel nothing but positive that you have the light on you. It's worthwhile.
Oh, I appreciate that. It's so funny. Throughout all the bad and good tweets that you get, obviously the negatives stand out more, but I know that there's so much more positive. And telling myself that, it's like, okay, we're good. But still, that negative pisses me off. God almighty. Just want to punch up through the screen. But
that's right.
Can't do that.
And it would only fuel more hate. We got to hug them through the screen, Bubba.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Love over hate every day. That's right.
All right, man. Well, great luck to you the rest of the season.
Thank you.
Really cool to get to talk to you. And I hope I bump into you. I hope you make it to the dunes.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I'll definitely take you up on that. We'll be out there on the West Coast. We got Sonoma coming up. So we'll be out there.
I've been on my own crusade out there to end the Confederate flag out there. It's probably only second to NASCAR as far as.
Oh, my God. There's so many.
Oh, I take
many.
Monica, my wife, out there, and it's like 100% of the flags on the dune buggies are Trump flags. And I'm like, everyone, just give these people a chance. They don't know.
Yeah,
but it does feel like you have to, like, personally go around and be like, so you need to take that down, and this is why. Like, when you see
I'm a real person.
Yeah.
That's tough. We'll figure it out. Appreciate you, Monica. Pleasure meeting you.
Thanks, brother.
Talk to you, man.
All right, take care.
Bye. Yes, sir.
And now my favorite part of the show, the fact check with my soulmate, Monica Padman.
Good morning.
Good morning. Ooh, someone's getting on their Harley outside. Did you hear that?
Yeah, that was a big rumble.
Yeah, they really had it pegged. Mm. Up around 6,000-7,000 RPMs.
I'm trying to think if there's anything that's outstanding that we need to be covering.
Hold on, though.
Okay.
How appropriate that a NASCAR driver.
Ugh.
And then that motor just ripped by.
God, I didn't even think about that. That's a ding ding.
Yeah, thing. It's a rev, rev, rev. Okay, things to. Okay, well, one thing we could update people on is that despite my great fear people would think I was disgusting. Many people wrote in to say that they, too, don't shower very often.
Oh.
And that when they do shower, they also don't use soap on their legs or their body, which made me feel less alone and terrible.
Yeah, and some dermatologists weighed in.
Yeah, it said it's really not ideal to be stripping your
skin
of all of its natural oils.
And I accidentally didn't shower for a couple days.
And you told me that. And what was the first thing I said? How's your legs? I said, are your legs dry?
And They were not. They were moisturized. But I did. I had used moisturizer also.
You had blamed it on something else.
Lotion.
It was sunblock?
Lotion.
Okay, Logie.
Yeah, nice lotion.
Just a normal loge. Any show, movie updates you want to
Well, we watched Mare of Easttown, but we can't really, I don't want to say, we can't spoil.
It's too spoilery.
Oh, I really should talk about Friends, but I haven't watched it.
Oh my God, you still haven't watched it?
I started it.
Oh, you did start it. Well, then what happened?
But then it was time to go to the Hansons and—
You needed more of an event.
I needed to stop.
Yeah. How far did you get?
Like 15 minutes.
Oh, that's pretty far. Is it 22 minutes like a normal episode?
No, it's like 2 hours. It's just a special.
It's 2 hours?
Yeah.
So it's a Friends
movie.
It's
like a doc. It's not an episode.
Oh, it's not?
No. It's like just about their time.
Oh, it's an interview?
Kind of, but then they do other stuff. It's a reunion show.
Well, a reunion show generally is they do an episode.
Oh, yeah, they're not going to.
They're not even going to do an episode.
No.
I guess it'd be kind of crazy as they've gotten older to see them like come into a one-bedroom apartment and act like they're
kids. Schwimmer was the most.
Oh, he's like leading the charge now. Yeah. He's the go-to comedian.
He's kind of attractive.
Yeah. It'd be a real fan of the show. You should want to sleep with everyone on the show, male or female.
Well, I.
Old or young.
I did at the time.
But not Schwimmer.
I mean, I would have.
Sure. Yeah. Because he was famous.
Well, no, he wasn't famous. Ross wasn't famous.
Oh, you're saying you would sleep with the character.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, maybe with, you know, my big preoccupation with Neve Campbell when I was a kid. And it was her character from that Party of Five show that I wanted to be romantically involved with.
Okay, name the top three characters of all time.
That I've been most in love with?
Yeah.
Definitely her. Neve Campbell from Party of Five. Painful when I watched it. Like, my stomach hurt.
Yeah.
That I knew we would never be together, and I hated it.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave it at that one.
I said top three.
I know.
Why?
I think that's it, though.
No. What about?
Oh, okay. Here's one. Patty Arquette in True Romance.
Okay.
And then number three, definitely Sally Field in Hooper.
What about Lisa Bonet?
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, she's definitely, I think, the prettiest human being I've ever seen on screen.
Uh-huh.
But it gave me probably more fear than like I could. I didn't think like, oh, if I ran into her, she would go for me and I could.
But remember the question. It's character.
I know, but you know, I've told you this about my fantasies have to be plausible for me to believe in them. This is a key of my fantasies.
Right.
So the character Neve Campbell played on Party of Five, I felt like would have liked me and connected to me. But Lisa Bonet was bare naked. She was into voodoo and she cut a chicken's head off. And I was just like, if I rolled into town, no way is she in, you know, that character Epiphany.
That makes sense.
From Angel Heart.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That is what I'm asking, characters. So she wouldn't be in there.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. But Sally Field and Hooper, yeah. Okay. She could have, because I'm so much like Burt Reynolds, as you know. I like to show off.
Yeah, sure. I just zoned.
Yeah, you did.
Because I was thinking.
About yours?
Yeah.
What are yours? Matt and Ben.
Character.
Yeah.
Yeah, Will Hunting.
Yeah, Will.
Yeah, Will.
Bill Hunting.
No, Will.
Okay.
I guess.
You're like clutching at straws.
I guess. Dr. Derek Shepherd from Grey's Anatomy.
Wow, who played him?
Patrick Dempsey.
P. Demps.
Yeah.
Yeah, McSteamy. No, McDreamy.
McDreamy.
You loved him.
God.
Yeah, fuck.
He was a smart brain surgeon.
A smarty pants. And then Crosby, Braverman. Okay, so now we're going to move on to.
I did love Crosby. I did.
You're probably like, oh, that'd be a good friend to have.
And then it was a sim.
Because now we are friends. What'd you just look at? You're looking to your walls for inspiration of who your third would be? Oh my God. I know it's like harder than you would think, right? Like I know tonight I'm going to go, no, definitely second to Nev. Like Nev, I know for sure. That one, I was in like, terrible pain every time I watched it. Almost hated it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to have to get back to you on the third.
Oh, here's another interesting one that would make my top 10.
Uh-huh.
Scarlett Johansson in Her.
Oh,
that's as the computer voice.
That's an interesting one.
But I felt lovesick at the end of that movie.
Yeah. It's weird that I can't think of, because I have so many.
Yeah.
So many boyfriends. One of mine is probably a Brad Pitt, but I'm trying to think which one.
Ocean's 11.
Yeah, because that character's charming.
You love Ocean's 11.
I do. Okay, mine's TBD. Got to get back to you on that. All right, okay. So I started
a hard game. We know number one. You know Will Hunting, and I know Neve Campbell.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also originally for me, but it's not anymore, was Angel from Buffy.
I don't know.
David Boreanaz.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I loved Angel.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. I don't know what kind of archetype he is.
He's brooding. He's a vampire.
Bad boy.
And he turns bad because they have sex.
There's always metaphors. Christian metaphors.
No, it's, we don't want
to. Well, Twilight was a total Christian metaphor.
Oh. Anywho. Okay, yeah. Well.
Well, there's
we
that.
We covered that.
Bubba Wallace.
Okay, Bubba. So the Michelle Obama thing, I had not heard of that. So I just pulled it up to see. It's so awful.
Yeah.
Okay, Michelle Obama and Jill Biden booed at NASCAR race. Yeah. This was in 2011. First and second ladies appeared at the Sprint Cup, the final race of NASCAR season, to promote their Joining Forces program, which supports U.S. military troops and their family.
Boo! Don't support the military and their family. Boo!
Obama and Biden were co-grand marshals of the race, along with Sergeant Andrew Barry, an Iraq veteran, and his family. The crowd cheered Barry, but those cheers were overtaken by boos when Obama's name was announced. Biden and Obama seemed unfazed and joined Barry's family in kicking off the race, shouting, "Gentlemen, start your engines." This sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
There's like over 100,000 fans at those things, too. So it's not like a few boos. It's a cascade of booing.
Booing is so stupid.
I don't think I've ever booed.
I've never booed.
No. It says a lot about you if you boo.
I mean, now I'm saying that. I'm like, have I?
Yeah, I probably have. We probably both have.
Like, because the crowd was doing it, maybe I did. But it wouldn't have been for a person.
Maybe a team. When team
right, that's
out.
What I'm
boo.
Thinking. Yeah. I still don't like that I did that. Silly. Yeah, it's very silly.
Yeah.
Very rude. God.
It's very rude.
Okay. Do you want to tell me about shifter car versus push and go?
Yeah. So, and I could be wrong about this, but my understanding is that probably 15 years ago, almost all kart racing was a shifter cart. So it had a 6-speed gearbox from a motorcycle in it, as well as a dirt bike engine, a 2-stroke 125 engine. So you'd shift the gears like in a manual car. And the current popular karting series are push and go. So you just start them and then they're automatics basically. I believe a centrifugal clutch in there.
Got it. So basically like the difference between
a manual and an
stick
automatic.
Shift and a, yeah.
But a shifter cart goes like 50 miles an hour faster.
Oh, wow.
They're so much more fun. That's what I have.
Yeah.
Because you have 6 gears.
Confederate flag.
Was a staple in NASCAR.
I'm really impressed that he was able to, I mean, and he takes it sort of just like, yeah, I did what I believed. I just answered questions and whatever. But that's hard to do.
Yeah.
When a whole sport
revolves around Southern pride.
Yeah.
And there's a symbol of Southern pride, which is that flag.
So I think that's really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing about the dunes I just don't like. There's so many Confederate flags there.
Not so many. Okay. There's a ton of Trump flags.
Right.
That is true.
Yeah.
The Confederate flags has been in a nosedive since I've been going there. Oh. I've been going for probably 14 years now. And yeah, they've gotten less and less and less. But yes, there are some. It's, you know, it lines up a little bit into a class structure, which is weird. Like you don't see sand cars with it generally.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Which are the nicer ones for people.
More expensive vehicles.
Have you ever talked to anyone at the dunes have you gotten in any like weird political conversations with people there?
I'm so outnumbered there
that
I just always go, well, you know, I'm a bleeding heart liberal. So anytime I enter a conversation, I always just, I make fun of myself first.
Yeah.
And then I say my opinion. Yeah. I'm never mute on anything.
Yeah.
And it always goes well.
Yeah.
Like most of my friends out there are Republican and they know I'm a big liberal and they just don't bring stuff up that they know I won't like.
Yeah.
And I don't either.
Yeah.
I don't talk about socialized medicine while I'm there, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not quiet. Like if you ask me what I think about gay marriage 14 years ago, I told those people.
Yeah.
And I've had BLM kind of debates out there with people. I'll certainly get into it, but I'm not there to change everyone.
Right.
You know, I acknowledge it's way easier for me to have this perspective because I'm white. I'm not naive to this, but I do recognize that there's a big spectrum of people who like that flag, unfortunately. And some people just are truly undereducated. All they know is it represents the South to them. They grew up with it. It was at their grandparents' house flying. Their dad had it on his truck. Mm-hmm. And it just represents the pride of being a Southerner.
But it doesn't.
But it doesn't. Many people don't, they don't recognize the gravity of it.
I know you want to give a lot of people that benefit of the doubt. And I just don't think that's true anymore. Maybe,
well,
for
maybe
at
not
some
anymore.
Time.
Yeah.
But now.
Yeah, now you're making a stand.
There's been too many conversations about it.
I agree. I take back. Yeah, I'm speaking more of like 15 years ago when I used to ride motorcycles with dudes.
Yeah.
Who just were into all things Southern. They were into all Southern rock. They were into, you know, Leonard Skinner.
Yeah.
And it was one symbol they could incorporate. And I did know people that had no fucking clue what they were.
Right.
But you're right. At this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'll take mine down.
Oh, goodness. Bye.
Love you.